Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
An author, and the book is really interesting. It's called The Most Hated Man in America. And the author is Mark Pendergast. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So now, first of all, Mark, what brought you to write about Jerry Sandusky?
Yeah, the subtitle of the book is Jerry Sandusky and the Rush to Judgment. I became interested in this case because, you know, I thought at first that he must be guilty because look how many people were saying he did all these terrible things to them. And he did take showers with young men, which I thought was really, you know, unusual, and why would somebody do that? But then someone called my attention to the fact that many of these cases involve repressed memory therapy, which I had written a book on. I have another book called Memory Warp, which is about how you go to psychotherapy and people would get you to remember things that never happened. The whole idea was that you could repress memories of terrible things that happened. And in fact, that's a myth that Freud began a little over 100 years ago. The fact of the matter is, if you have terrible things happen to you, you remember them well. That's what post-traumatic stress disorder is. So when I began to look into this case, I realized that many of the cases involve repressed memory therapy, including victim number one. His name was Aaron Fisher, who made some vague allegations. He basically said that Sandusky had hugged him and cracked his back after they practiced wrestling. And that was it. They both had their clothes on. And it was only after his therapist worked on him for quite a while that he came up with allegations of oral sex and many other things. Now, I know that, you know, sometimes people are ashamed, particularly boys or young men, to say that something happened to them. But in this case, the allegations kept changing over time and getting bigger and bigger, which is quite typical of the sort of repressed memory therapy that I'm talking about. So that's what led me to look into the case. And then the more I looked into it, the more crazy it got. There was this huge media blitz where he was found guilty in the press and by Barack Obama, for that matter, before he was ever tried. So I thought that the book was worth a good skeptical look, and the more I looked into it, the more skeptical I got. And it's a complicated case. Two of the original, quote, victims one of them didn't exist at all. One of them was a janitor who had supposedly seen Sandusky doing terrible things to somebody and told another janitor. And it was only the second janitor who testified because the first one, in the meantime, apparently had dementia. Only it turns out that they had tape-recorded an interview with him before he had dementia, in which he said, no, Sandusky wasn't the guy I saw. It was somebody else. His ineffective lawyer apparently either never listened to this tape or certainly never used it or introduced it into the courtroom. Another one, victim number two, was named Alan Myers, and both sides knew this, but they never had him testify because at first he had given a statement, a very strong statement, saying, yes, I was the guy in that shower in 2001, and Sandusky never did anything to me. We were slap boxing. That was the slapping sound that assistant coach Mike McQuarrie overheard. But in fact, it was just us, you know, goofing around in the shower. And Sandusky never abused me. He was a very important mentor in my life, which most of the Second Mile kids, this program that he began, said when the police came to them. But the police weren't interested in them. They said, well, if you remember something terrible, let us know. And they would direct them to lawyers and therapists often. So I do hope, I'm not going to convince anybody by talking to you just for an hour on the phone, but I do hope people will get hold of the book. It's on Amazon, The Most Hated Man in America, Jerry Sandusky and the Rush of Judgment, and read the whole thing and make up your own mind.
Well, what about the assistant coach? What about his walking in on Sandusky? So you're saying that that's not believable?
What happened was, his name was Mike McQuarrie, and the night that he overheard sounds, that's all that happened. He heard slapping sounds, which he interpreted as being sexual. He did not see Sandusky in the shower. He went and talked to his father and his father's boss about this that night. And his boss, whose name is Jonathan Dranoff, said, you know, but what did you see, Mike? What did you see? And he didn't see anything. He overheard sounds that he thought were sexual. So 10 years later, and the longer you are past something, the more your memory is uncertain about things, and the more you tend to reinterpret the past. And, you know, the alarming thing about memory is all of our memories are subject to change and influence over time. If you've ever talked to your siblings about, you know, a childhood memory, some of them are different than yours, and some of them think that it happened to them and not to you, that sort of thing. So in this case, the police came to him and said, we know Sandusky is this evil monster, and we heard that you saw something in the shower. So now McQuarrie changes his memory and says, oh, yes, I saw him standing behind him with his hips moving, which is not what he said at the time. So again, you don't need to have repressed memory therapy to change your memory. You simply need to be influenced. And he had, you know, a scenario in his head that something bad must have happened, and then 10 years later, it became worse in his mind. So that's what happened. And as I said, we know who the kid was. His name was Alan Myers. And he gave this very strong statement, but then, you know, 2 weeks later, he got a lawyer who named Shubin, Andrew Shubin, who turned out to make a lot of money from many of the alleged Sandusky victims. And Shubin basically hid Myers from the police for some time because he couldn't get him to actually say anything strong in the case. and when he but he supposedly said that Sandusky was had really abused him. So neither side called him in the trial. They just called him victim number two. The defense was afraid to call him because he had flipped, and the prosecution was afraid to call him because he had made these very strong statements already.
But I,
Sandusky was totally innocent. So it's very, you know, it's a very unclear, and that's the linchpin of this whole case is Mike McQuarrie, and that's what everybody knows about this shower incident, that he supposedly walked in and saw this, and that's not what he saw.
Well, backing up just a little bit, you've covered a lot of ground that I think is very, very important that we kind of analyze. We're talking about repressed memory therapy, but this case, along with several others throughout the 90s and the 80s, were there not some issues with them actually creating memories? Not so much that these memories were repressed, but they were actually, you know, using therapeutic methods, were actually creating memories that never actually occurred.
Yes, that's my whole point, is that's precisely what was going on. Now, the therapists who did this weren't intentionally creating false memories. They truly believed that they were helping people to recall terrible things that were so awful that they had banished them from consciousness, a theory that almost everyone still believes in the United States, even though there is no scientific basis to it, and it's not how memory works. But yeah, you tell somebody, you are depressed, or you have bad relationships, or you have an eating disorder, and those are symptoms that you were sexually abused, therefore you must have been, and we can help you to recall it. And, you know, most people don't think that this would happen to them, but if you didn't know ahead of time that this was pseudoscience, then it's quite likely that you would say to yourself, well, I don't think that's true, but if it were, how would I remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they can either hypnotize you or tell you that you would dream about it, and in which case you indeed would dream about it, because you dream about something that you're worried about and obsessed with. So it became sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy over time. And there are many indications that that's what happened in the Sandusky cases. And if the defense attorney had known what was going on, they would have been able to figure this out from what many of the people said during the trial.
Sure.
Say, you know, more things are coming back to me now that I hadn't remembered before, et cetera.
Yeah, because, I mean, now, at the base of all repressed or created memory, there is some basis to it. For example, you mentioned that one of them claimed that, okay, Sandusky hugged me and popped my back, which, you know, if you've been in a locker room or you've played any type of sports, it's absolutely nothing unusual about that at all. But it's almost as if these therapists used that as the basis and then begin to build on it. And I understand what you said, that not everybody intends to, but let's be intellectually honest here. Sometimes a therapist does have an opinion and begins to take these therapeutic sessions in that direction, even if at a subconscious level.
That's true. So, for instance, Dustin Struble was a quote, victim number four, and he said, as far as being able to go back and confront my memories from the past, group therapy sessions has helped me, and is also a very good way to influence people with other people are telling stories. They must be true, and you must have them also. So he was the only one I was able to interview, and he told me, actually, both of my therapists have suggested that I have repressed memories, and that's why we have been working on looking on my life for triggers. My therapist has suggested that I may still have more repressed memories that have yet to be revealed, and this could be a big cause of the depression that I still carry today. Mm-hmm. We're still working on that. So, and during the trial, he had said, that doorway that I had closed has since been reopening more. More things have been coming back, and things have changed since that grand jury testimony. Is why he's explaining why he's now saying that terrible things happened that he hadn't said before. Through counseling and different things, I can remember a lot more detail that I had, quote, pushed aside. So this was very clear. Clearly talking about repressed memories, but the lawyer, Joe Amendola, had absolutely no clue about this, so didn't jump on it at all. They should have made this a big issue during the court case, but they did not.
Mark, may I ask
the other thing? Sure, go ahead.
Just thinking, I'm not as familiar with the history of criminality in the United States, being British and more in tune with English criminality. But these children, the victims, what age were they roughly when they were allegedly abused? And then how much therapy had each of them had before the court hearing?
Well, we don't know, because I wasn't able to interview most of them. Okay. So I do know that several of them were in therapy. Mike Gillum was the therapist for victim number one, Aaron Fisher. He was also the therapist for Brett Houts, who was sort of the star victim, and the one who made most of the allegations, the worst allegations. Some of them, you know, there were two of them who came after the allegations became wildly public, and they put out a hotline. And most of the cases that have come since then, I don't think needed repressed memories, because it became very clear that Penn State was going to dispense millions of dollars to basically anyone without any vetting whatsoever. And that's what happened. So now there are something like 35 different, quote, victims who came forward. And I don't think that you needed repressed memory therapy for those. Many of them are you know, so unlikely as to be completely preposterous that, you know, Sandusky must have run around doing this constantly. He wouldn't have had time to coach or to see his family or do anything else, if you believe all of these stories.
Isn't that the way that therapy works? And I don't know of any therapy that doesn't work in the way where there's a period of time where there's relationship building, and then it's very much led by the client as opposed to being led by the therapist. So when we're talking about maybe memories kind of being conjured, for want of a better phrase, or made up, etc., is that likely that would have happened to all of them? With therapists that would inadvertently plant information?
Well, it depends on what sort of therapist you are. Yes, in good therapy, you simply listen to your client. And
true.
Also, if they say, you must have had something terrible happen to you that you don't remember, and I can help you to remember it, that's bad therapy. But there are many therapists who continue to do that, who believe in this theory of repression. And it seems fairly clear that the lawyers involved were directing people to that type of therapist. Or the police believed in it. As I said, the police would tell people, you haven't told us anything bad that he did, so sometimes at 3 a.m. you might remember something. So give us a call if you can recall anything dreadful that happened. By the way, one of the Sandusky children, one out of the 6 adopted children, did accuse him in the middle of the trial after listening to somebody else. He went to therapy, and he accused his father. And he said this to Oprah on her, and he said it to the police, that he had just begun to recall things, and that, let me see if I can find a quote for you. Matt made it clear to Winfrey that he had not recalled sexual abuse until he was in repressed memory therapy, but that this apparently did not make her skeptical. So based upon what you're telling me, you actually repressed a lot of it. And Matt said, oh, yes, absolutely. The physical part is the part you know you can erase. And so it becomes very clear that he didn't actually recall this until he was in therapy. He talked about, his inner child therapy, et cetera, et cetera. So there are all kinds of telltale indications that that's what was going on.
But there are also examples where that very much that there is repressed memories, and over many years things come to the fore, something triggers an emotional response or a memory, or as you say, you are plagued with eating disorders or other disorders that would indicate, and they are symptomatic of abuse. So how can we be completely...
Well, Julie, let me take issue with that. I investigated this for many years. And the theory of massive repression, the idea that terrible things could happen to you for years and that you would completely forget it, doesn't stand up. I couldn't find one case that did stand up to that. And if you think about it, as far as evolution is concerned, it doesn't make any sense. What we tend to remember best are the worst things that happen to us so that we can avoid them, or the best things that happen to us so that we can seek them out again. What I did find a few cases where people had forgotten a limited incident, like a single incident, but it wasn't usually something like rape. It was fondling or somebody exposing themselves. And somebody, it was confusing, but it wasn't necessarily traumatic. And that's the kind of thing that you could be reminded of later and think, oh my God, I'd forgotten all about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens, but the notion that something really dreadful would happen repeatedly to you and that you would completely forget it, I do not think is the case.
I agree with that. Is it the case also, Mark, that when people go through trauma, other detail, they may forget other detail about events around them as well?
That's true. It's like if somebody is threatening you with a gun.
Mm.
You famously might focus on the gun and not pay attention to the face of the person who is threatening you. So sometimes you become hyper-vigilant to things. But that, let's say that your mentor, Jerry Sandusky, is doing horrible things to you. You're going to know that he's doing horrible things to you, especially if he does it repeatedly. You're not going to forget that. The other reason I think he's innocent is that I, you know, got to know him fairly well, you know, through meeting him a couple of times in prison and having a lengthy correspondence with him. And, you know, and I read his book. He wrote a book called Touched. If you were a serial pedophile trying to hide that fact, do you think you would name your autobiography Touched? or write about how you would go, you know, how you were the great pretender, which he meant that he was in a singing group called the Great Pretenders, or that he liked to engage in fantasy play when he was a kid. But there's so many things about this case that simply don't make any sense, including the way that, you know, the trial was conducted.
Now, I know we were all just giggling in jest. You know, he wrote a book named, you know, Touched. But we also have to remember that O.J. wrote a book saying, you know, I didn't do it, but if I had of, I would have done it like this. You know, I mean, so I mean, it's kind of an unfair comparison. But something that you glanced over, and I think it's worth revisiting, because you're bringing up a lot of really valid points. But I need to ask you this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's come to light here recently that there were 8 gentlemen who testified. Were there any variations in the testimony, or were they trying to create a modus operandi for Sandusky? You know, like, okay, here's 8 witnesses, and they all pretty much say the same thing. And if they did all say the same thing, was it the same therapist that was treating all of them?
Well, as I say, I don't know who was treating most of them. I only know a few. But, you know, some of the stories were similar. The police had this theory that he would, quote, groom people, you know. So, for instance, one of the quote, victims was a kid that he took a shower with in 1998. His name was Zachary Constance. And his mother was alarmed that Sandusky had taken a shower with him, so she turned it in to the police. And so they interviewed the kid the very next day, and he said, no, he didn't do anything to me. he hugged me, but there was nothing sexual. No, he didn't have an erection. No, nothing happened. And later, he was in therapy, and he couldn't ever remember anything, but he indicated that maybe he thought he had blacked out or something. Now, Sandusky was found guilty of abusing him, even though he never claimed any abuse, because he was supposed to have been, quote, grooming him. Now, some of the other stories, he was supposed to have, you know, crept up on this and done things a bit at a time. Then a few others, he was supposed to have, you know, immediately, the very first time he ever did anything with them, he touched them or made them touch him, and so that doesn't fit. And then the two that came along later, after the allegations had become public, you know, they weren't groomed at all. He just did terrible things to them immediately. One of them said that he was locked in his basement and he didn't feed him and he screamed for help and nobody came. No, they don't all. That's the same thing.
Now, when did that happen? I mean, I remember this story, and I remember, you know, this is a sports coach, and, you know, these young men are making these allegations and, you know, this is terrible. This is horrible. You know, I don't want this to happen to my child. And that's about the limit of my knowledge. But from what you're describing, I can kind of see it. But at the same time, I'm not seeing enough evidence as a law enforcement officer to really go after this guy. Now, when you say, let's visit some of this. You say that this young man claimed, okay, the coach showered with me, or did he shower with the team? Two different things. One's unusual.
It was unusual. Sandusky grew up in a recreation center that his parents ran. They lived on the second floor of it. They didn't have their own shower. So he grew up taking showers with other kids and with other men, and it was sort of a 1950s mentality that he never got out of. So he did things that were completely idiotic. There's no question about that. He took showers alone with boys, and he set himself up for this by doing so. And I think many, many people hear that and think he's guilty, period, just because, you know, he took showers with boys. But in point of fact, it was sort of just the way he grew up. And he was kind of like many people told me that he was like a big kid. And I think that he was. I mean, I sent you a copy of the book as a PDF, but I don't think you've had time to read it, have you?
No, sir. I'm quite honestly, I have not.
Yeah. That's okay. I hope you will, because I think that it will be a lot more convincing to you if you do that. I also had a whole section on, you know, each of the accusers and of what Sandusky himself was like, what many people said about him. Sort of autobiography, how he started the Second Mile program to try to help troubled kids, and how this whole thing has, you know, destroyed it. So, let me see if I can find something to read to you. Buddy Tesner was a Penn State linebacker. Jerry and I really hit it off. He was a happy-go-lucky goofball, a touchy-feely guy, and I was like that too. No, he didn't seem to be overly interested in boys. He was a man's man, a great football player in his time. And he worked with high-level athletes to develop them. You know, one of the reasons that people jumped on this case is that, and especially now with the Me Too movement, it's even more so, is that, you know, we sort of love to see the high and mighty fall. The worse, the higher they were, especially if they were a sports figure, the more we kind of immediately assume that they were guilty. And I think that's what happened in this case.
I know.
It's been amazing to me that this... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can't wait to read the book. I'm based in the UK, Mark, and I can't wait to read it because, and there aren't many books that when we talk to people that I absolutely need to go and read. But I've worked in child protection in the UK for 20 years and have worked with children who have been abused and worked with identifying abusers and then working with the families. And you know, listening to what is only a very, very small snippet that you're able to give in a very small interview time, screams kind of almost at kind of alarm bells for me, thinking all of these things, you're absolutely right in what you're saying, because all of these little things in their isolation would lead people to a view of this man is guilty. So I cannot wait to be able to read your account and really go into that detail of exactly what it is that you've been able to unpick through working closely with him or being in that communication with him. But one of the questions that came from that for me was your passion in this clearly comes through and it's you know very informative, it's fantastic. But how did you prevent yourself from the possibility, if this man potentially was a groomer, he was somebody that could, let's just say, for example, he had committed these crimes and that he has been convicted of, and he has put little things in the way to try and, I don't know, maybe try and get people off his track, so the naming of books, etc. So how did you not get pulled into that story? What safeguards did you put in place to make sure that you could be completely objective and not groomed by somebody?
Well, you know, you never know for sure about anything unless you were there.
Yeah.
It's just that there were so many indications that there were problems with the story. One of the, you know, I interviewed a specialist in pedophiles named Dr. Fred Berlin. And he told me that in his experience, it was extremely unusual for a serial child molester to maintain his innocence, that mm-hmm. almost all of them would admit that they did something, but they would rationalize it. They would say, oh, I was really, it was love, it wasn't really abuse, etc. He said in his experience, only one person had maintained his innocence and was later proven to be innocent, as a matter of fact. So Sandusky refused to take a plea bargain. He said he was innocent and has said he was innocent this entire time. And so that was one of the things that convinced me. I'm trying to think of... It's been a while since I wrote the book, so I'm having to revisit my own book.
I worked with a gentleman some years ago now, probably maybe 10 years ago. I worked with a gentleman who was there had been various sexual images found on his computer. He had two very young children. And I interviewed him as part of the child protection initial investigation. I interviewed him at the point
right.
of court processes to remove children from the care of his wife because we didn't know if she was involved or not. I interviewed him in prison. And he still maintains that he bought a PC and these images just happened to be on it. And there is absolute evidence that that could not have happened. but he still maintains his complete innocence, that he's not any risk at all to children. And I've worked with lots of...
Is it possible that he didn't put those images on his computer, or are you absolutely sure that he put them on?
Forensically, he has accessed those images multiple times since that had been in his possession. And he gave...
So he was simply...
bought it and everything.
He was just lying then, raise an important and interesting point, by the way. Most pedophiles do have images on their computer. They have child pornography. Sandusky had no pornography, period. Nothing. Ever. On his computer, in his home, or anywhere else. He also, by the way, had very low testosterone. That's why he and his wife had to adopt all six of their children.
Okay.
So it's rather unusual because, you know, if you have low testosterone, you have a relatively low sex drive, presumably. Although his wife told me, and he told me, that they had, you know, regular sex, a satisfying sex life. Maybe his wife is lying, maybe he's lying. I got to know her fairly well, too, Dottie Sandusky. And, you know, the irony of this is that these are, you know, sort of prudish Christian conservative type people. They don't drink. I mean, I interviewed all of the children also. And aside from Matt, who had his repressed memories, they all told me the same thing. That no, you know, I assumed that if he were a pedophile, and five of them were boys, and there was one girl, and they weren't, you know, related to him by blood, that surely he would have come on to one of them. But he didn't. But this case was so toxic that none of them wanted to go on the record and tell me under their own names that that was the case. Let me read you something. A few months after the trial, a State College resident who insists on remaining anonymous wrote this: "The venom that the nation had for Jerry Sandusky was at incredible levels, but the interesting thing was that nobody really knew the facts surrounding the case. And what was strange was that nobody wanted to know the facts of the case. I quickly learned that this was not something you discuss in public, ever, under any circumstances. I remember being out with my girlfriend at a dinner last year with her friends. I stupidly brought up the Sandusky case, and I remember the waitress turned around while waiting at another table and said, 'He should rot in hell.' My girlfriend's friends then went on to get angry at me because I had the audacity to suggest there might be something amiss here. I was basically no better than a child molester for the rest of the night. That was the last time I brought it up in public, and why I would never want my name used in any type of public forum where it came to this. It's fruitless, completely fruitless. The public's mind is made up." And I think that that is still true, despite the fact that this book is quite well documented and well researched, and I'm a well-known science writer. I have received very little attention for this book. There have been very few reviews. The sports journalists have not covered it at all, zero, despite my, you know, approaching many, many of them and saying, "Look, would you just take a look at this?" So it's very frustrating. And one of the things I pointed out is that when people make mistakes, they don't like to admit them. Once you've drawn a conclusion, it's very, very difficult to say, "Oh, gee, I did something wrong." And in this case, I think it's very unlikely that any Pennsylvania judge is going to say, "We made a mistake." Once it gets to the federal level, I have some hopes that, they will take a more objective look at the entire case. We'll see.
Yeah, but... Mark, you can kind of understand the hesitancy, though, because this is a crime that, you know, socially we see as so abhorrent that, you know, nobody really wants to, you know, we don't want to get any of that on us, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I totally understand it. I get it.
Well, what,
you know. And it took, you know, a fair amount of courage for me to write the book.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that you said there's no pornography on his computers, but the postal inspectors are saying there is.
Uh-oh.
They are?
According to CBS News and Associated Press, U.S. postal inspectors are leading a federal investigation into whether former Penn State assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky shared pornography with other individuals. He said that they have at least one of his computers had pornography, but they didn't guarantee that it was of any of his victims, but it was of children in sexual situations. So
really?
I'm just,
what's the date of that?
That's a CBS report from 2015, I believe. Yeah.
That's very surprising to me because, you know, in all of my research on it, I certainly did not find.
I do a lot of writing myself on true crimes, and I just know there's a lot of different angles to things. You can't always, as soon as you start to come up with an assumption, you know, a conclusion, you're no longer investigating. And, what about the actual eight victims that testified under oath that he molested them and had sexual encounters with them over the years?
I'm saying is that they changed their stories.
Not all of them. Not all eight.
Only one of them.
Only one. So how about the other seven? I'm just standing on their side.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is that it wasn't just one who changed the story. They all.
Yeah, but we're talking about boys that
almost,
are 10 to 12.
They were in their early 20s. These were not boys who testified.
No,
these
they weren't
men.
Boys by the time they testified, but they're saying that it happened when they were,
right.
You know, 10 and 12 and stuff like that. And
right.
Yeah, it may not be as consistent as we like, and it may change, and it may change for different reasons. There's points of embarrassment. There's points of they're living their life now with a wife or kids, and they're in a job, and they have to be careful about how and what they say and what comes out because it affects their lives as well.
Right. Well, that's the theory, that's what happened, and that they really had been abused, and that... So when they were first asked, they said, no, he never did anything to me. He was a mentor to me and a good guy. And then they would gradually change and add more and more and more until finally, you know, he was having oral sex with them regularly and attempting sodomy, et cetera. So you can argue exactly what you are arguing.
Well, I really see nothing substantial to think that he didn't do it, and his religion and his saying he's a Christian, being prudish and not drinking and even having a good sex life with his wife, absolutely means nothing, because that tends to be the people we find in the airport bathrooms tapping their toes trying to pick up men. That's a mere fact. That's just the way it is. There's no way that it means anything. I mean, you have to take it the direct evidence more than just an overview of, well, I feel like he wouldn't because, well, he's a good Christian prudish man that doesn't drink. I don't know. That's just my side. I just don't see anything substantial. No evidence, just feelings, and that doesn't cut it.
Well, there's right. There is, you know, you can't prove a negative, so you can't prove that there's no repressed memories, and you can't prove that somebody is innocent. So it's entirely, you know, possible that he is guilty. I don't think so for all the reasons that I've enumerated here, although the fact that you say that they found some pornography on his computer is certainly surprising to me, and I did not know that until this point.
Even if there wasn't, I would say that's still not evidence that he's not having sex with people. It just doesn't prove anything one way or the other.
No. So, but what I'm saying is, they interviewed some 600 of these Second Mile kids. Almost all of them said, he was a good guy, he helped me to get scholarships, etc. And I know you're going to say, well, he could help people and still be guilty of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But they only found, for like 3 years, they had this one kid, Aaron Fisher, who wrote a book with his therapist called Silent No More. And if you read it, it's abundantly clear that his therapist influenced him highly by saying, I didn't even need them to tell me something. I would guess what had happened to them, and I would tell them, and all they had to do was nod yes or no, which is absolutely terrible interviewing and terrible therapy. And if you look at the pattern of the way that all of these allegations came up, with the exception of one kid, Michael Kajak, who did say the very first time that he encountered Sandusky, he did something to him, but that doesn't fit the pattern of grooming either. And he had known all these other kids who were going to therapy before that. So, you know, all I can do is hope that you will actually, you know, read the whole book and have me on again after that, because the points you're making are certainly well taken, but I think mine are as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah. No, it's all good. I just don't see things as one-sided. That's all. I like to look at all of the evidence and all of the situation as a whole, not just particular little spots or particular little things that we can't explain. And we have to bring in all the evidence and review it as a whole. And that's how I see it. So that's how I do it. But it's not.
Well, I agree with you that you should do that. But for instance, you know, the president of the college and the two assistants and Joe Paterno have all been smeared, and Paterno died, but the other administrators were found guilty of knowing about this horrible abuse and not doing anything about it. But that's all based on this McQuarrie incident, which, as I've explained, quite clearly did not happen the way they're talking about. So, among many other things, this has spun off so many different lawsuits and caused such a huge commotion without sufficient evidence. So, anyway.
Listen, I'm being summoned. Yes, it's been interesting, and we've really enjoyed it, actually. And we're going to have the book linked on our website, and everybody pick it up, check it out.
Thank you, and also have the book Memory Warp link on there, too, if you would.
For sure, yes.
I'll find that on Amazon as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a very important conversation. Again, thank you. And we will have you on when we get through the book and we have a meeting and talk about it, and then we'll have you on again.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.